Hey, it's Eric G. Around the House is sponsored by Baldwin Hardware. For 75 years, Baldwin Hardware has been known for its first-class quality and craftsmanship in door and cabinetry hardware. As an alumnus of the Baldwin Hardware Design Council, I can say I have seen the details and quality from design to the finished product. If you're looking for a new style and old-world craftsmanship, I can tell you there is only one Baldwin Hardware. Check out what would look great in your home at baldwinhardware.com.
Get you on the radio, yeah, you gotta get on the radio. If the kids can only hear you, they go out of control. You gotta get on the radio. You want the money and the fame and the sold-out shows, and you gotta get on the radio.
Welcome to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
Hey, give us a call in the studio or reach out to us on our website, which is Around the House Online. We've got this great place over there. Contact us. You can hit us up over there. It's the place you can catch the podcast. You can see some of my More Good Day Oregon segments. You can catch all those different things over there. And, of course, hit us up on Facebook, Around the House with Eric G. And that's where you'll catch you could actually be a part of Around the House Nation, which is our closed group. And that's where you can post up those, those project pictures, the things you're working on, the questions you have to a very friendly audience. And that's what I like about that closed group.
We also have a way for you to get your hands on some merch. I'm actually wearing my Around the House Nation hat right now.
Yes, you are.
Which I don't believe that these are available at the store.
No, those were custom for the insiders. Ours.
But we have shirts, we have mugs, and again, you can find all of that at aroundthehouseonline.com.
Yep, you can just go up and click under the store. It's right under my beard on the website. You can't miss it.
Like you could ever miss the beard.
Exactly, exactly. And we made a few changes to the website, too, so if you haven't been there for a while, take a peek at that.
Looks a little different.
A little bit of upgrades on that one. So I wanted to talk. I did a fun little project here this last weekend over the holiday.
Over the Labor Day weekend?
Got it. Had some fun with that. You know, I knocked out a lot of different projects. I mean, I had so many things to get just wrapped up, finished up.
It's a good weekend to get it done. All those summer projects. Yep. Put the bow tie on it.
Yep. Just had a lot of stuff. Had some dump runs and had my buddy Whitney Enterprises come by and drop off boatloads of dirt out front. We're going to bring him on coming up soon. We're going to be talking concrete with him.
Okay.
And he's a concrete expert, so he is one of my go-to guys for concrete. So we're going to talk some slab concrete coming up soon. So we'll be bringing him in. But he's a guy I've worked with for years. I've done some killer projects with him. And he's the guy that whenever I ran into a project that was going to be difficult, I give him a call.
He was your go-to for that.
Yep. And, I mean, we're talking about I had a project here in the same town I live in here in Lake Oswego. And, man, this project, holy smokes. He wanted to take his large crawl space and make it into a basement. And we did it.
Okay.
Do
you have to put in another crawl space underneath?
No, we just dug it out, poured concrete floor, had to put in some new fittings. It was on a canyon side as well, so we just had a lot of different stuff to do. And it was super cool house. Love this house. It was a great project. Did a couple years ago, but I had to bring him in. We had to do all these new footings, and it was a complex project.
I was going to say, are you basically? Because I'm guessing at the bottom of the crawl space was the foundation, correct?
Yep.
So you're basically building the basement is going on top of the foundation itself.
Well, kind of what happened is you've got the foundation, which is around the outside of the house that's holding the house up because this house has been there for a long time. And you had a crawl space that was like 7.5 feet tall down below that you could walk into.
That's not a crawl space.
Yeah, it was dirt floor, though, and it was very uneven.
Yeah.
And so we ended up going in and literally having to hand dig stuff out.
To level it out.
To level it out, come in, pour footings, put in another beam because you had to move stuff around. So there's
to reinforce it.
It was way complex. But he came in and knocked that out.
Cool project.
It was
really
cool. It was a cool project. So, well, I wanted to talk today a little bit about my project here that I did. And it's been on hold for a while, but we finally got it knocked out. Is doing my shed roof. And I'm like, what's a shed roof? But I tell you what, I put on these new shingles from our friends over at GIF Roofing. and use their whole system. So I put on this very chic looking architectural shingle. So it looks like it's almost like a wood shake roof. And it is cool. So it is one of those things that when you get out and take a look at that, it's interesting because there's all these different layers on it. And when you have different layers like that, it adds a really cool look to it. And Dane, you've seen it. It's one of those things that it gives you a cool look, but this was a cool process because this stuff is like rated for Miami-Dade County.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it is like...
It's going to hold up.
It's a fairly hurricane-proof roof shingle. And, I mean, I put it down a day later. We had 55-mile-an-hour winds. It didn't move.
Nothing. It didn't budge at all.
And so they've got different layers underneath it, which is really cool. So they've got two layers you put on. It's almost like an ice shield, but it's got a granular thing on the bottom that you put down in those areas where your valleys would go. And since I've got what they call a shed roof, think of a roof that's just like a plank and an angle. You know, there's no peak to it. It's just a single slab roof to the side. And so with that, it's got four exposed edges around the outside. So with that, I had drip edge basically around the whole outside of that. So I did that in the circle, and then I used their new composite layer, what would be their replacement for 30-pound felt, and got that put in. And I was posting some pictures and some video up last weekend, so you can go over to Around the House and take a look at it. By the time I got that stuff in, and the biggest thing was that stuff is so thick. You have to be patient in cutting it. Cut, even with a good knife. There's multiple layers of roof, and it's all, you know, kind of like fiberglass.
It's rough to kind of get through.
I'd almost have to swap my blade after about every couple pieces because I was just chewing blades up, and I needed to have a little bit better blade. I was just using a kind of a medium-duty blade, and I should add one of the titanium ones or something like that because I was shredding blades pretty quickly with it, but all that aggregate does it. But I tell you what, it went on there, and I'm like, this is going to go on the rest of my house. This stuff is beautiful.
It's it is. The texture durable. On it is. It looks really cool. I dig it.
Yeah, it's cool. So anyway, it's just one of those things that I like different styles of roof out there, and there's a lot of cool things you can do. But, you know, I've got a few years left on mine, but when I do, I think that might be one of the ways I'm going to look into going because that's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. And what I like about it, too, is it's got, you know, I mean, it's a lifetime warranty roof. Put it up there and forget about it. I mean, and that's the cool part of that is once it's up there, and most people have a professional put it on, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Not the easiest DIY project. But what are your questions on roofing, man? Because I know it's something that you haven't really dove into before.
No, I've never done any roofing, to be honest. And just one thing you may have just turned to me because you said the two words that I always have questions about. You said lifetime warranty. My first question is how long, at least for this company, how long have they been around?
Oh, GAF has been around decades. Okay. I couldn't tell you how long. I'd have to do some serious research.
That's always one of
my
biggest
things. They are one of the major, you know, one of the major companies out there. They're one of the top. You know, they're probably internationally, if not the biggest, one of the biggest.
And roofing is really, as much as I hear that it sucks to do during the summer, it is really the only time, at least in our area, that you can really do roofing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I mean, one thing I want to back up with this, with the GAF stuff, just to be clear with it. When you put in, like what I did, the other accessories, which is the systems beneath it, they give you, I put their whole system in start to finish. By doing that, I get the lifetime limited warranty on shingles and accessories, which is cool.
Okay.
And so it's not going to leak. It's not going to fail. Lifetime limited warranty, which is kind of cool, which I like. Back to your question again, though. I wanted to kind of back that up a little bit. Here's the thing when you're dealing with, it's like kitchen cabinets. It's one of those things I'm always a little worried about with lifetime warranties. You know, kitchen cabinets, that's 15 years.
Yep.
You know, those details that you got to watch out for because what's the life of it?
Of a roof. Yeah. What is the typical lifetime of a roof?
You know, here's the thing. If you're talking three tab roofing, like what's on my house, that's a 20-year roof, as they call it. By about year 15, if you're in a harsh climate, it starts to look a little rough. You know, you get into the regular architectural roofs, those look, you know, you'll get 30, 35, because they're thicker. You got multiple layers. They've got different technology to it.
Yep.
you really get into something like this, and this is really kind of getting up into that 50-plus year roof.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, if that's within what they're willing to hold up as the lifetime limited warranty, if they're willing to go, that's an awesome.
I mean, there's always exceptions on warranties and everything else, but just kind of giving you an idea
is
of how that works.
If it's the usual window is 20 to 35.
Yeah.
And they're willing to back it up for an extra 15, like that's an, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where you're at on a roof like that. I'd really, just for me as a homeowner, and I am no spokesperson for these guys, and I have a lot to even learn about roofing because I've done my own. I've done stuff. I am by no means a roofer. And not to get over my skis on GAF here, they got a good product, and it went up nice, and I'm really happy with it. And, you got to read all the details on any warranty out there. But it is definitely something that I would put up, and it's kind of a set-it-and-forget-it product. And like any roof, I don't care how expensive a roof you got to put on, it's just one of those things that you got to be really careful with your maintenance. You're keeping it clean and making sure that, like at my house with windstorms, this last week I had branches coming up and hitting the roof of the house. And I'm like, I got to get up there and check on my regular house because I could have a couple little holes popped in the shingles up there because we easily could have a couple potential areas for leaks, especially the one that hit last night. Which sounded like I had kids jumping on the roof. Julie thought Giselle had fallen actually in her bedroom. She's like, "Is she okay?" I'm like, "No, that was in the roof above us.
That wasn't in the room across
the
hall.
She's fine. That was over her head." And I went up and looked, and there was a branch that fell that was about the size of two baseball bats glued together that hit the roof kind of on end. So it's one of those things that hit it hard. So more around the house. We're gonna talk some kitchens just as soon as we return.
Hey everybody, it's JT from Barbecue Nation. If you're listening to Around the House, you can also hear Barbecue Nation on this platform. That's Barbecue Nation, where we talk about outdoor cooking and fun.
What's up? This is Stick
and Satchel from Steel Panther, and you are listening to
Around the House with Eric G.
Yeah.
We love Eric G, and you should too.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is your home improvement source every weekend. Thanks for listening. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
Hey, it's also your home improvement source during the week as well. Make sure you're catching us on the podcast on the midweek special. Make sure you're catching both what we call hours in a loose sense, both episodes, episode 1 and 2, that come out on Saturday that are broadcast on the radio and are released as a podcast. And then for all you people out in the trades out there, I'd give a Thursday trade special that we do that we're kind of in the middle of rebranding right now. So it's been called the Around the Toolbox. I'm not sure if we're going to stick with that, but that is going to expand out and get to be a little bit bigger of a format. But make sure you're catching that all week long. And, of course, hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all LinkedIn. Those different places, LinkedIn. And over there, I think I'm even on Parler, which is, I think, the new one out there. So there's all this new stuff out there.
Not on TikTok?
No, I'm not too many 13-year-old homeowners out there. So for all you 13-year-old homeowners, I'm sorry not to pick on you.
But you're in the minority.
But you're not my demographic. I apologize. But, it's one of those things. And by the way, I got to tell you, since you guys are listening here, that would be kind of funny. Dane decided to give me a little test on how old GAF roofing was. Wondering, how old are they? And I'm like, well, let's look it up.
Yeah, you're just like, they've been around for a long time.
I mean, they have, yeah. So,
but they have, yeah.
Number one shingle in North America, established in 1886. So I'll call that a long time.
Absolutely. That's, you're over 120 years old. I will totally buy into your warranty.
So awesome stuff. Well, I wanted to kind of switch gears here because it's one of those things that I'm seeing. It's getting into kitchen and bath season. You know, October is traditionally kitchen and bath month.
Okay.
And now that we're, knee deep in September all of a sudden, and as handyman Bob would go knee deep, and he'd give his little frog thing. And I was still scarred from that. Thanks, Bob. We're getting into that stuff. And so there's so many people that all of a sudden right now are going, I want to have my kitchen remodeled before everybody comes over for Thanksgiving. And you're too late.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That is, you need to be doing that 6 months before Thanksgiving.
Correct. Correct. If you want to have Christmas, if you want to have done before Christmas dinner or Hanukkah dinner or whatever you do out there.
4th of July, I would say, is your cutoff.
Yeah, you kind of should be doing that. You might be able to pull it off right now if you're good at making decisions. But I tell you what, that's pushing it.
It's to me, that seems like it might be a rushed project.
I think you're not going to get there. In many years, I would say you might be able to get Christmas by early September. But you're really not.
That's only 3.5 months?
Yeah.
And you're starting now?
Yeah, and you're starting the process right now. You're too late for that. So start working on your 2021 plans for that. But I wanted to talk about my 5 tips to avoid those big mistakes. And they're big mistakes. And when it comes to kitchen design and kitchen remodeling, big mistakes are big, expensive mistakes.
And it's going to just, you're probably just going to have to do it over again. So you're doing the same job twice.
Or you're going to hate what you ended up with.
Yeah.
Which is painful. Because, you know, with the average kitchen remodel out there that you're writing a check for, if you're paying for a contractor, being in the mid to upper $60,000 with laminate countertops in it.
Well, it's not just money. It's also the time.
Yeah.
You're going to be without your kitchen.
And you're going to have people trouncing in and out of your house, working on it. You're stuck at home with everybody probably still. And you've got other people on your lap as well. And dust and noise. And it's a stressful time of year to do that. So it's just one of those things that you need to be very careful with. But so here are some of my tips that I wanted to give. And there's some detail to these. And I just want to explain them out so everybody understands what they are. My first one, hire a professional designer.
We talk about this pretty much whenever we're dealing with a big remodel. This is something you need to do.
It's going to save you money. This is not the place to get cheap. And no offense to our many friends, and I have friends that work out there, that work in the home centers. Many times, the best kitchen and bath designers start out in the home centers as their first or early jobs and realize they can make 2, 3, 4 times the money going out and being a designer for another company. So many of the great designers end up leaving fairly quickly out of the home centers. Now, for the person that doesn't need to make a lot of money, aren't driven by that, and want some decent benefits, and have no problem working in the home center, especially in smaller towns, there can be some people there that are pretty good
at it. Because there's, I mean, for example, in the smaller towns, where else are they really going to be? That's where your pros are going to probably congregate.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's one of those things that really hire that designer. I don't want to see you drawing your own kitchen out. Because here's what happens. And this is going to tie into another one of the ones. Well, actually, we'll wait to tie into that. Into one of these upcoming ones, this can cause these other things to go sideways.
Well, because more often than not, the contractor is just going to go, okay.
Yeah, what do you want to put in there? Yeah, cool, you're paying me.
Great. I'll put it in. That's what you want.
Great. And so what that designer is going to do is they're going to keep you from making the big mistakes. They're going to help you with color, you know. And I'll say this, as a certified kitchen designer through the National Kitchen and Bath Association, I'm going to tell you to hire a certified designer through the NKBA because that is the kitchen and bath specialty organization. There are a lot of interior design organizations out there that specialize in general design principles to commercial design. But if you want to hire somebody that is specifically trained for doing kitchens and bathrooms, you go to the National Kitchen and Bath Association.
Well, in the NKBA, they do testing to make sure that people are staying up on their stuff, right?
I mean, I took my test in 1999. I took it the weekend they were tearing the kingdom down. So that tells you how long ago that was. And it was an 8-hour exam. It's like taking the bar. I mean, it is a brutal exam.
And is there continued testing after that?
You have to get so many hours of education in a year.
Okay, so yeah. So there is a way to keep up on it.
And so those are things that you really got to pay attention to because those kind of people are the ones that you want to bring onto your project. And more importantly, I wouldn't want to go in and have somebody who was maybe the paint department last week is now a kitchen designer this week because that's going to be expensive. And I don't want you to spend money on things you don't want to do. More of my tips just as soon as Around the House returns.
Hey, this is Ron Keel, the metal cowboy from Keel, the Ron Keel Band and Steeler. We are rocking Around the House with Eric G.
Raise your fist, make your stand.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every weekend. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
You know, thanks for everybody out there. We have been just doing so much with this show, and it's been growing across the country, internationally. I really just want to say a sincere thank you for everybody listening on the radio, everybody catching us on the podcast. If you ever are on the radio and you're driving around, you're going to go into that home improvement store and check out something, and you're running around on a Saturday, you can always catch the podcast. Easiest place, go over to aroundthehouseonline.com, and we got it right there. And you could also, while you're there, if you got questions, send us an email on that same thing.
Also, if you have a question that you may want to have answered and heard yourself on the radio, you can give us a call here in the studio. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 971-233-8992.
All right. We've been talking about my five tips to avoid those massive big mistakes in your kitchen remodel project, because I tell you what, this is where I see the biggest ones going. And it's sad because, you know, I'm on a lot of social groups on Facebook. And I'll be honest, there's probably two of them, and it's not the one that I'm on with Cindy. There's another one over there.
About done with it?
I'm done with it.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of just angry trolls.
Just looking for a fight online.
Oh, I this last week I got into it with a freaking plumber on HVAC stuff, and he had no idea what he was talking about.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
A plumber who's
yeah,
know.
He's quoting code for North Carolina and saying this people out in Oregon need to be doing something. And the guy just, he had no idea what he was talking about. And he was going to get somebody killed. That was the worst part. And I'm like, ugh. So anyway, you got to be careful with some of that stuff that you get on these groups, some of the advice.
Your online professionals.
Yeah. Some of these, that's one group that, man, I'm bailing out of, because it's just like, it's just filled with online trolls, and they don't have a good moderator. That's the one thing I like with some of the other ones out there, that there's some decent moderation.
Attentive and consistent.
Yeah, people are, they clean it up, and that's just a free for all, and it's just a disaster. So I'm going to make my life a little stress free.
If you want to join a group that is moderated,
you got it.
You can join Around the House Nation, our closed group on Facebook, where you can ask questions, share projects, and just talk about everything DIY.
Exactly, exactly. So be careful with that information out there. So we're just talking about my five tips to avoid big mistakes in your kitchen remodel. The next one on here, change the lighting.
How? So I saw this on the list, and I'm curious, how is it a big mistake?
You got to change the lighting, because here's what happens. Most people, when they're changing, you know, the average lifespan of a kitchen is 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Most people wait to 30 to do something with it.
Well, because it seems like a bigger project.
It is. It just gets drug out. You know, it starts out with beautiful wood cabinets. Somebody gets tired of that. They paint them white, paint them gray, paint them blue. They put contact paper on the laminate, and they do something weird, you know. And it's just you can't do anything with it, and they go away. Well, problem is the lighting plans that we did and the lighting fixtures that you had in 1975 or 1985 are way different than in 2020, 2021. So with LEDs and things like that, you can do so many more things. I mean, half the kitchens you're seeing remodel right now still have those fluorescent light clouds in the middle of with the flush ceilings up in them with fluorescent light tubes in them.
Yeah.
So you got to read.
Just a headache.
Just redo all those lights. And if you go in and figure out a plan to do under cabinet lighting,
mm-hmm.
and you figure out task lighting coming around for that under cabinet, and then make sure that you've got your overhead lighting done correctly, you're good to go. Because what that does is you can actually go through and figure out where your work zones are in there and figure out where the light needs to be. You can create a shadow-free light, so you've got the most perfect workspace with that. And that's the beautiful part of that, is that you can go through, fix all those problems, because now as you design the new kitchen, you're already into it anyway. Fix the lighting, put in the LEDs, make sure you get it dialed in, and it's going to save you some time.
It's probably the quickest and, I'm not the kitchen and bath guy like you are, but that seems like it'd probably be one of the cheaper upgrades that you could do.
It really is. You're already going to have an electrician coming in there anyway, because if you've got 30-year-old cabinets and stuff in there, you've got to get it upgraded to code because you're going to need new circuits in anyway. Do the lighting. Don't cut back there. It's one of the worst places to cut. So that's my tip kind of number two. Now, this is a kind of a two-part tip, number three, and I want to get to this one because it's really important. Design with work zones in mind.
Especially, yeah, with a kitchen, there's so many different areas.
So there's two theories of kitchen design out there. There is the National Kitchen Bath Association, which is the work triangle. And what they call the work triangle is that is the area between your stove, your sink, and your refrigerator. That is your work triangle. I've kind of gone beyond the work triangle. I design with kitchen zones.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. The work triangle can get you some good ideas so you're not walking too far in between those. So hear me out on this one. If you have think of your kitchen sink, okay? So you've got a dishwasher on one side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So pick the side of the dishwasher is on.
Left. Okay?
So if it's on the left and you put the stove farther over on the left, right?
Okay.
So you're standing at the sink. Next to your left,
you have the dishwasher.
You have the dishwasher.
Yep.
A couple feet beyond that is your range. You've now put your most popular prep area and your cleanup area in the same zone. Because what do you do with the dishes if you don't put them in the dishwasher?
Put them on the counter.
Put them on the counter in the sink. Well, that's your prep area too, because you're always cutting things between the sink and the stove.
Well, see, and when we first kind of got into this, I had this mindset. You were talking about the work triangle. And for me, my first thought process, I've worked in kitchens and whatnot, is prep, cook, serve.
Yeah.
Is that basic kind of the same thing?
But that's my work zone thing.
Yeah.
But you got cleanup in there too.
Well, yeah. And
a residential kitchen, you have cleanup.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's commercial kitchen, cleanup's back over here.
Yeah, it's all one big machine.
It's a machine.
But the sink is always going to be cleanup for me. Like, that's just that one area.
It is, but it's so much prep, too. You know, if you're cutting vegetables you got that, you're cleaning stuff off, you're doing that. So I don't like to – I want to make sure – so in that situation in that kitchen where I'm staring at the sink, in front of the sink,
mm-hmm.
I got the dishwasher to the left, I got the stove farther over than the left – that dishwasher, for me, always gets moved to the right of the sink.
And so that you have a counter space. Well, I mean, you still have the counter space if the dishwasher's there.
Well, the dishwasher, if I moved it to the right of the sink, now I can have that area over to the right over there be cleanup, right? And then what I do is I put a pull-out trash can to the left of the sink.
Okay.
So now when I'm sitting there cooking, cutting plastic up,
it's getting right ready there to go, next to you.
It's right next to me. And when I'm cleaning off dishes, let's say you're after dinner.
Yep.
You walk up, trash can's on the left, scrape it off, dishwasher's to the right. So that's my work zone theory. You know, just like you want to have a countertop next to the double oven.
Yep.
So you can have a place to land.
A place to cool things.
Yeah, place to cool things. You know, I want to have a piece of countertop next to the fridge so I can pour a glass of milk.
Yep.
You know, those kind of things that you need to have those zones. And that zone works out really well. Now, in that, I also want to manage traffic flow. This is where traffic management is key. Many kitchens, like a galley kitchen where you've got them on opposing sides of a kitchen, that might be a hallway as well. Or if you've got an island, maybe you've got an L-shaped with an island, mm-hmm. I want to manage traffic flow as best I can in that kitchen. I want to make sure that my refrigerator is on the end, at the farthest point of that kitchen. Because if you're a cook in the kitchen, it might take you two extra steps. But if you've got somebody coming over for the big game and you got a party and people are going in to get beer all the time and you're making dinner,
You don't want that fridge to be deep in the kitchen.
I don't want that deep in the kitchen because I got people underfoot. Get out of my space. So I want to limit that or put in a beverage fridge to help limit that. So that's some of the things that I want to do when I manage traffic flow is I want the people that are supposed to be in the kitchen cooking in the kitchen.
Well, and one thing that I seem to realize when it comes to kitchens in the home is when you have multiple people trying to cook and they're walking over each other and stepping over and continuously revolving around each other, there is a way to fix that.
Yeah, put in a second prep sink. If you've got, for instance, if you've got the range on the other side of the, if you've got a galley kitchen where you've got two opposing sides.
Yep.
So there's a right and a left side of the kitchen. If you put a little sink over there on the other side, now that person's not having to go back over and scrape, and you can put Rinse a garbage disposal in there, and a trash can, and guess what? They're never having to cross over to that other sink because now they're adding liquid off of that. They're draining pasta in there. They're never having to do that. So these are those things that you can do, especially with two cook kitchens. You can make things a lot easier. And those are the things that I really want people to think of when you're dealing with kitchen design and where those mistakes are. And this is where that experienced designer comes in.
Now, I don't, a galley, I know what you mean by galley kitchen, but what about when it's capped? When you just have a dead end kitchen?
Like a U-shaped kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. Like how can you fix traffic flow in a U-shaped kitchen?
Well, again, I'm going to put that refrigerator on the farthest point out. They're far enough away that people don't get in there.
Or the closest point. Yeah, sorry, to the entry.
To the edge. Yeah, I want to keep it towards the outside edge of that. I want to get that out. You know, if you're in the kitchen, it's the farthest out of the kitchen, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to do that. But really, when it comes down to that, I want to make sure that the same thing, it's spacing. Many times with spacing, I like to have a 4-foot walkway in there. Sometimes that room doesn't do it, but if you've got an island with two cooks in there, I want countertop edge to countertop edge be 4 feet. That way, you can open up a dishwasher door. You can open up a range door. You can open up a lot of different things without people colliding. And if you keep people out colliding, you got a safer kitchen, less people getting hurt. Or around the house, just soon.
Finish was my man because he couldn't help me.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every weekend. It's that last segment of the show, man, where we get in and try to wrap up and put a nice little bow on this one. No interviews today, just us talking home improvement.
Well, and it's just getting through these tips. It's breezing by. This is going quick.
It is. And so these are all things I want to be talking about. Hey, and if you're just tuning in on the radio right now to us, make sure you catch the podcast. Anywhere you catch podcasts, I think we're on about 18 or 19 different formats, but you can always go to aroundthehouseonline.com. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
We've been talking my 5 tips to avoid those big mistakes in your kitchen remodel since we're coming up on Kitchen and Bath Month in October. This is one of those things that I just want people to kind of be thoughtful of as they're going in planning that kitchen that they said last year that they didn't want to cook another Thanksgiving kitchen.
Now is October Kitchen and Bath Month because finally everybody's coming back inside from the summer season?
Pretty much.
Okay.
That's really what it is. And there's probably more reason to that than not, but that's the National Kitchen and Bath has always called that October Kitchen and Bath Month. And I just wanted to really get the thought process going on this stuff. Now, for instance, we've already talked about, you know, hire a professional designer, you know, making sure you change your lighting, design with work zones and traffic flow. One of the biggest ones here that I think is the biggest mistake I see people do, they copy their old design. They don't think outside of the box. They go down and they go to Home Depot, they go to Lowe's, they go down to their import Chinese cabinet shop, they go to IKEA, whatever they're doing. And they go down and don't use the designer, and they go down and buy the exact same things and put them right back where they were.
Well, and I think as somebody who, you know, from the outside kind of looking in, they're looking at what they have. They're like, okay, I have this much space for a dishwasher. That's how much space they think they have without actually going in and doing a full remodel. They're like, okay, well, I've got, I don't know, 24, 32
inches. Yeah, 24 inches what the dishwasher is,
Yeah, and then they're going, okay, well, I'm going to have to replace it in just this space. No, you can move that around.
Yeah, if you're taking those cabinets out, you need to start over and start over in your thinking process. Here's the thing. If you've got a 30-year-old kitchen, that is so inefficient compared to space used today, especially with the half-overlay door styles, which means that the door overlays the face frame by a half inch. You can go in and change cabinet construction and gain 18 to 24 inches of usable storage space by just how you change the construction of the cabinets.
There's a lot of
big deal
dead space.
Yeah, if you've got a small kitchen, you know, go to a frameless kitchen cabinet, which means there is no face frame. So it's just a 5/8 or 3/4 inch box. There's not that big 1x2 face frame or 1x3 face frame across the front. That saves you a ton of space. Gives you, you know, 18 to 24 inches in a small kitchen. That's a bunch of storage.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm going to tell you, too, just another little tip that's almost number six, make sure you use that space in a small kitchen. Use every little ounce of it. Go up to the ceiling, get rid of the soffits, do what you can to get the storage in there. It'll end up for a better kitchen.
Put some shelving or something like that.
Do what you can. But copying that old design, my theory in this is think about what went into a kitchen in 1976. Not really a microwave. No. Kind of on the edge of that. You're coming out to that. You had a toaster oven, maybe a crock pot, and a toaster, and a coffee maker. And that's your kitchen appliances.
Well, and no one wants to do like what they kind of did in the late 70s and have the, I mean, if you did have a microwave, you had it on a tray.
Big old cart, yeah.
Yeah.
Old cart. Here's the thing that I just wanted to touch base on this, and this is just an important tip. Here's what happens when you copy that old design. You're now copying the storage trends of that year. And so if you go in and think, okay, I don't need that many doors and shelves. I need to add drawers. We have, walk into Williams Sonoma, Kitchen Caboodle, name the different kitchen-esque stores in there. There's 1,000 pieces you put in your kitchen that didn't exist back then.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think of your kitchen as a storage device. And when you're trying to store things that didn't exist using the old design, that's one of those biggest mistakes. I want you to go in, think outside the box, and have that designer help you get the right space, because it might not cost you any more to do it right and get so much more comfort and usability out of it.
I mean, I have seen so many of my friends who aren't very, they just have their stuff and they put it on the counter. So when it comes to like the mixing bowl for baking, All of it doesn't have a home. It just sits on the counter. Whereas you could organize your kitchen in a better way and have everything have a home and still have plenty of space to be able to do what you want.
Oh, look
to
at
do.
My kitchen. What we had to do to that thing was tiny. And I had to put two in closets. Some shelves. Yeah. And I mean, it's hacked together now until we do the kitchen remodel here this fall. But it's one of those things that, I cut off the peninsula, made it go away, opened up the room, So there are things that you can do to really get things updated. I just want you to really think outside of the box. Now, before we run out of time, the other thing I want to talk about, we talked a little bit earlier, using all your available space. Those corners are big space wasters. And I see people sometimes trying to be really kitschy in their design, and they'll put like the refrigerator in the corner or something goofy, or a big double oven in the corner. Man, you are crushing space. Many times to do that, you're taking up 3.5 to 4 feet each side. So you've lost a ton of space. Go in, use a blind corner with a pullout or one of the magic corner type mechanical pieces in there, or a Lazy Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Do something with it. The last thing I'm going to tell you to do is to go ahead and put in that that corner appliance in there, because it just crushes space. Unless you're trying to do something to balance it out or to try to match something architecturally, it's one of the worst uses of space. And kitchens, rarely do you have too much space in a kitchen. It does happen when you get into newer stuff, but it's tough.
So you're saying with those big appliances, the double ovens, a big double door fridge or something, Those should always kind of be in the middle. They should never be on the edges?
I don't like them in the corners. Okay. I don't like them in the corners at all, because when it's in the corner, it's just a big problem.
Yeah.
It just takes up too much real estate. And the problem is that as you put those in the corner to make it work, you got to pull it out. Because you think about the geometry of that, when it goes in there, it's one of those things, you have to pull that now off the wall maybe 18 inches, because the front has to be touching the edge countertops. You don't want to sink that back in the corner.
No, it doesn't look good.
You just take up so much space, and that just ends up being super horrible, and nobody likes to do that. I mean, when you get into that, just have a good designer. Go back to number one. Hire that professional designer.
There's a reason it's number one.
Put your two cents in. And, put a good quality cabinet in there. But really, follow those steps, and you're going to have a great project. But you got to trust in your design professional. And design is not a great DIY project. It takes kitchen and bath designers years to get good at it. And that way, get a good project, and you get your money's worth when you do the remodel. That's all the time we got for this week. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vauder.
And you've been listening to Around the House.
Around the House with Eric G. is produced by Designed by Eric G. in association with Salem Media and distributed nationally by the Sun Broadcast Group. All rights reserved. Copyright 2020 Designed by Eric G. We will be back next week. If you missed part of the show, check out the podcast of all of our shows at AroundTheHouseOnline.com. Remember, measure with a micrometer, mark with caulk, and cut with an axe. Thanks for listening to Around the House.
Hey, it's Eric G. from Around the House. Are you planning a decking or siding project this year? If you are, you've got to check out my friends at Millboard. Millboard is a completely different kind of composite decking and cladding that enhances outdoor spaces with enduring distinction. Hand-molded from the finest oak, it realistically mimics the natural grain and color of premium hardwood. If you're looking for something that doesn't look like plastic and instead real wood, check out Millboard.com. Make sure and check out that interview we did just a few weeks back. That's Millboard.com.